about? It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Amy Adams.
Hi, Amy. How are we going today?
Good, Laura. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. It's been a long one, but we've made it. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good. I must say I'm looking forward to December tomorrow and then the run into Christmas, so bring it on.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually got a text in last week, which I wanted to share with you. Someone was saying they absolutely loved your comments about feminism. So a little BFM love from the listenership for you there.
Oh, that's nice.
All right, so let's jump into the cannabis bill. Do you back it?
Well, we've voted for it at second reading, and obviously we've been working pretty hard to try and come up with something that everyone agrees with, but I'll be really clear with you. We've got a bill that we think is a much better framework, and we want to see the government pick that up. So the reason we've voted for it at second reading is because we want the bill to go to the next stage, which is called Committee of the House stage, and that's the stage where we can propose changes to the bill. And what we're going to do, obviously, is propose the things that we think are missing from the bill into it through that process. And if the government picks it up, then that will be fantastic and we'll continue to support it. If they don't, then I think there'll be real problems with our support because we don't think the bill at the moment is what it says on the tin at all. It is not a workable medicinal cannabis scheme. It is unworkable. And in our view, it creates effectively backdoor legalisation of recreational use. Now, people will have their views on that. But our view is we don't want to see large-scale, widespread legalisation of growing and using of loose-leaf cannabis for recreational use. And we think this is what this bill actually will do. When it comes to medicinal use of cannabis, we agree there should be a good, sensible, usable industry and access to those products for people who need it. But as I said, we think this bill is going to create real problems with workability and actually is going to go far, far further and effectively decriminalise, and we're not in favour of that.
Mm. So what are the kind of changes that you're talking about making to this bill?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's quite long in detail, but effectively Shane Retty has done a huge amount of work with the potential growing industry, with people who are large-scale, you know, growers and providers of cannabis in other countries, looking at what's called GMP, which is good manufacturing practice, because like anything we take into our bodies, we have rules in New Zealand to make sure that it's manufactured in a sort of a hygienic and, you know, careful way and properly labelled and all of those things. So Shane's put together a whole framework to setting out how and where you could grow cannabis, what the rules would be in place around it, you know, so whether it could be near schools or residential zones. What sort of processes are in place around GMP licensing, who can get access to it. And actually he's had a huge amount of support from everyone, from doctors, pharmacists, the user groups, as I say, the potential growing industry, who want a well-regulated industry. One of the things that this bill doesn't do is actually talk about the process under which cannabis can be grown and turned into medical products. So we're going to have this strange situation if it passes the way it is, where there'll be a defence for smoking cannabis if you are terminally ill or under palliative care, but no rules at all around growing it. So effectively, it's still going to be illegal to grow and distribute it, but okay to smoke it if you're terminally ill. And we think that's just this crazy, you know, crazy confusion of laws. If you're going to do it, you've got to have a proper, set of rules around how this industry works from start to finish, and that's what we're proposing.
Mm. The bill has also received criticism from someone who suffers with chronic pain who's been speaking to the media. They say that 380,000 chronic pain sufferers in New Zealand are not going to be able to access this. What do you think about that criticism?
Yeah, I did read that report, and it's the changes the government's made in the last few days around palliative care will obviously have their supporters and their detractors. But to be honest, I think there's a much bigger issue, which is that if it's still going to be illegal to grow and distribute the cannabis, simply having a defence to be able to be caught, you know, smoking it or using it is your real problem. And I think that's a bit weird. And if we get that bit right, if we get the industry set up properly, if we understand what the rules are around growing and obviously the site security and the manufacturing and how it's distributed, then you can have a much more all-encompassing group of people who can access those products. When you've got this hodgepodge system, which is, in one sense, it's all still illegal, but there's a defence if you sit in certain narrow groups, I just think that's just not workable. So don't get us wrong, we want to see a good medicinal cannabis scheme. We think we've designed a really good one. We want to work with the government on it. You know, everyone always says to us, be constructive, you know, support what's good, and we'd like to see the government do the same here, because we think, and actually it's not just our view, as I say, we've got a wide range of people coming out and saying what my colleague Shane Reti's come up with is a really good proposal, but the government so far is not supporting it. So we'll see what happens at committee stage, and we're hoping they'll get on board.
I'm also curious, because you and I both are very interested in talking about tax, so I'm curious. I mean, I love it.
That seems about us, Laura, but never mind.
Probably does. But I'm curious about what you have to say in terms of this conversation around cannabis, where people bring up that it's a good source of tax revenue in other countries and states in America. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I guess any product that you can sell and trade is a source of tax revenue, and that's you know, that's a statement of fact. But the issues for us when we talk about the legalising and use of cannabis are not around tax. There are plenty of ways we can grow our economy and grow our tax take. It doesn't mean it's a good reason to legalise cannabis. That's a discussion that we look at. It's not on its own merits. We're not that desperate for tax revenue that we'd say everything goes as long as we can have a fund. We're certainly not going to legalise pee because we could get tax revenue off it. So I think that argument doesn't really take you very far.
Okay. I'm going to talk about Ian Lees Galloway, which chomping at the bit, I'm sure. So what's come out at the minute is that Judge Roy Wade had said during the court case that his life, Shrewbeck, it would be in danger if he returned to the Czech Republic, which was a large part of Ian Lees Galloway decision to not deport him. What do you think about that?
Well, the minister has an obligation under law to make his own decision, to go through all of the facts himself and reach his own conclusion. Simply saying, I'm not going to read the file, I'm going to rely on what another judge has said, isn't doing his job. So you don't just get as a minister to say, well, this judge over here thought that, so that's good enough for me. His obligation is actually to go through, read all of the information and reach his own conclusion. And I think, you know, what's becoming clear is he hasn't done that in a competent manner at all. I think he's been negligent. I mean, he himself, I'm not putting words in his mouth, he himself said he didn't read the whole file, he didn't go back and ask for more information. He did the whole thing in less than 45 minutes. He's now come out and said, actually, the decision is the wrong one. He should have to go. I mean, we had Winston Peters in Parliament yesterday saying that the minister made a mistake. He shouldn't have granted the residency. And that's what we've been saying all along. But here's the bit that really gets me. Even after the minister made his first decision, for days and days, both he and the Prime Minister were saying it's the right decision, read between the lines, he'd gone back, he'd gone back to the farm, had another look, he had more chance. This was after all the stuff was starting to come up into the media. You know, if you go back to the timeline, we knew that this chap had been back to the Czech Republic within just a couple of days of this story breaking. So Ian Lees Galloway had all that time to say, gosh, I wasn't aware of that, we need to relook at this. Actually, he was still defending the decision and insisting he'd made the right call. I think it's an utter, an utterly reckless and incompetent decision, and it's one that goes right to public safety, certainly, but also, you know, fairness. You look at all the people who have been turned down who want to stay in New Zealand, who are good, hardworking people who have been part of our society and raising kids here and have been told, no, you must leave. And yet this drug-dealing, violent fraudster who has given false information to Immigration New Zealand, which in and of itself is normally a reason to kick you out, the minister thought was good enough to stay. I think it's utterly incomprehensible. And, I'm not one of these people who's calling for resignations all the time. In fact, I don't think I ever have. But I think this is a case where the minister absolutely should resign. I think it is a shocker of a decision.
Shrewbeck actually spoke with the media very recently, and he said that Ian Lees Galloway, he believes, has had to bow to national party pressure. Do you think that's fair to say?
Oh, come on. I mean, it's our job to highlight when the government makes utterly shocking decisions. But let's be fair, you look at the media commentary over the last, you know, what is it, four or five weeks that this has been going on. This is not just the National Party standing up and saying this is an absolutely shocking process. And if Ian Lees Galloway is that weak of a minister that he bows to because he bows and changes his mind because the National Party's complaining, then he shouldn't be in the job. If he truly believes he made the right decision, then he should have stuck with it. Even Winston Peters is saying he got it wrong. effectively saying for the Prime Minister, because that's who he was answering for, the fact is he made an appalling decision because he didn't take the time to do his job properly. That's on him, and he shouldn't be looking to point the finger everywhere else.
Just very briefly touching on Schrubeck in terms of him saying that his life is in danger if he returns, do you think that holds any validity?
Well, I haven't, I'm going to be very careful. I haven't obviously seen all of the file and all of the information that the minister has. That information is obviously just for the minister. I think, though, would I trust the word of someone who has lied to immigration, has lied to res court processes, who the parole board say is a danger to the residents of New Zealand, and who is a convicted drug smuggler? Would I trust his word? And a man who's independently and with his own free will already gone back to the Czech Republic? No, I wouldn't trust his word.
Shifting on to the tax working group. So
yeah. Still on tax.
always. It's one of my favourites. So this week, Sir Michael Cullen confirmed the tax working group was set up with creating a capital gains tax. Do you think the government has been evasive around this subject?
Well, I think actually it's just made clear what we've been saying all along and what, frankly, people behind the trap have been saying all the way through. The tax working group was set up to deliver to this government a capital gains tax. I'm in no doubt about that. The government's tried to play ducks and drakes a bit and say, well, we'll see what the independent experts say, but I can point to a number of cases where the government set up independent expert groups and then ignored them when it didn't suit them. They have told this group to go away and deliver them a capital gains tax. We know a number of the members of the committee have remained steadfastly of the view that there shouldn't be one. It's not the right way to go. But Michael Cullen has obviously managed to talk enough of them over the line that they'll recommend it. So that's no surprise to me at all. I think, though, that what's going to be really interesting is to hear from the people who are adamant on that expert panel that we shouldn't do it. And I think there's very good reason for that. That these are well known to be complicated, difficult, expensive taxes, not just for the IRD, but for New Zealanders who have to apply them. Chances are it won't raise very much money in the short term because of where we are in the asset cycle. But my bigger concern is that I think it discourages the very things we want to encourage in New Zealand. So it discourages the running of small businesses. It discourages people investing in building houses and providing more rental income. It discourages people savings and investing and trying to get ahead and providing for their own retirement. And that's sending entirely the wrong message. But I always come back to kind of the simple question, before you start worrying about what new taxes we should have, ask yourselves, do we need any more tax? And the reality is we don't. If we keep our economy growing well and we spend the taxpayers' money that already comes in effectively, we can do everything we need to do and more without taking more money out of New Zealand's pockets. There's no excuse for a tax grab by government, even though Michael Cullen is going to try very hard to create some.
I think just jumping back to what you said about it discourages people from investing in the housing market. I find that interesting because under a housing crisis, you would think that is something you kind of want to encourage because you don't want so many people relying on that market so much. What do you think about that?
No, see, what I'm saying is the opposite, and actually even the government has been saying this week what we've been saying for years, that the answer to the housing price issues we're seeing build more houses, right? I mean, if you look at the rental market, which we've been talking about a lot at the moment because obviously rents have gone up so much in the last 12 months. Again, what we need to do there is have more landlords coming into the market. We need more rental properties in the first home buyer market. We need more properties being built. So you've got to say to yourself, okay, what do we need to do to make sure that more houses are going to be built? And putting more taxes on landlords, whether it's capital gains tax, whether it's ring-fencing of losses, whether it's a five-year bright line test, and more taxes in that market are not going to see people invest. And let me just give you one kind of simple example, right? So let's say you've got $2 million and you're sitting there saying, do I have a $500,000 house and then put $1 million into building up my business and then I'm going to buy a rental property to put into the market? Under what they're talking about, $1.5 million of that will be taxed. But if you go and say, well, do you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to put $2 million into my own house. None of it's taxed. So people will make decisions about where to put their money to, you know, to minimise their tax. That's what people do. It's called their, you know, economically rational arguments. And so now you're going to have a situation where it makes much more sense to have a very expensive home of your own, which is tax-free, than to actually stay in the house you've got and have a couple of rental properties that you rent out. That doesn't help renters. It just sees fewer rental properties and rents rising. And so I think, you know, that's what I mean when I say it's going to discourage, you know, the growth in the rental market and the growth in the housing market that we do need.
Mm, I've just received a text in asking, why does tax discourage someone from owning a business? You pay it if you make a profit.
Because you already pay the taxes on your profit anyway, right? So if you're a hairdresser or a mechanic and you run your own business, obviously the income you make during the year, you're already paying tax on that. So of course you have to pay tax on your profit. But when you own a small business, and you talk to any sort of small business owner, they work incredibly long hours and often they pay themselves very little. In fact, the business owner gets paid last. So if there's anything left over after you've paid your rent and your insurance and your cost of your products and your staff and your rates, what have you, if there's anything left over, the business owner gets it. But they still work 12, 15-hour days, because what happens is that over time, if you can build up a good clientele and a bit of, you know, reputation in your business, then you've got an asset that you can sell. So what we're saying is do all of that, but then when you come to sell that asset, you've got to give a third of it up to the government. So all of that incentive to work really hard and to build that asset for the future goes away.
Mm. Just going to jump on to my usual last question, which tries to shift away from the political. So last day in November. Yeah, we're going to be bombarded with a Christmas countdown suit. I'm curious. What is your favorite holiday?
Oh, favorite holiday. Do you know what? This is going to be a bit radical. Probably New Year. Because I just find, like, I mean, I love Christmas because you're with family and stuff, but normally, if you're like me, you get to Christmas Day, you've finished work like a day before or maybe 2 days before. You're utterly exhausted. You're kind of cranky. It's been a long year. And if it's me, I just kind of want to cool off by myself somewhere and be left alone. But by the time the year rolls around, I'm relaxed. I've had a good night, you know, a few good nights' sleep. I want to catch up with people. You've got all that kind of pressure of, you know, presence and family and where you're supposed to be and who you have lunch with is kind of gone. It's just this relaxed, easy time. People are in a good mood. Pressure's off. You know, it's the height of the Kiwi summer. And I love it.
Yeah, actually...
It's a bit bad humbug, isn't it?
No, not at all. I kind of think about New Year's as the brunch of holidays, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we'll be talking with you next week, Amy.
All right, see you, Laura.
Bye, have a good one.
Bye, you too, bye.
The National Party's Amy Adams on 95 BFM.
The Wire.